This is Local MASH.
Get inside and lock your doors.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to Local MASH, a local and regional original music showcase based right here in Birmingham, Alabama. We're brought to you in part because of our friends at Church Street Coffee and Books in Crestline Village in Birmingham, Alabama. Go to Church Street or the devil will get you. This podcast is also made possible through our partnership with Boutwell Recording Studios in Homewood, Alabama. Boutwell Studios, creative audio and production. My name is Daniel Long, and I was fortunate enough to sit down with Taylor Hollingsworth again to talk about his latest release, Country Visions. This is part one in a two-part series, so you can find the second portion of this conversation and the remaining tracks from the album, which we will listen to in its entirety, in the next episode. We're going to kick it off right now with Bedtime Blues, and this is Local MASH. Because that was Tap Dancing Daddy, right? That had just come out when...
I think so. So that would have been about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you had Lo-Fi and Lo-Fried, the EP kind of thing, right?
Yeah, the cassette, which, to me, I had recorded that years ago, so...
Right.
That just kind of, me and Wes had talked about doing something together with that label, so I was like, well, I got these kind of cool lo-fi jams that I've been wanting to do something with.
Yeah.
And sent them to him, and he was like, hell yeah, let's put that on a cassette or something, so.
Yeah. So did you produce those, or did he have a hand in that, or how did that work?
I did everything on the recording for it. That was,
just a joint release.
We put it out way after the fact, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, man, the Love You, Syd Barrett thing. What sucks is that I believe that there was a better recording of that. I mean, the same recording, but I think there was a better, clearer version of it that I lost over the years. And I tried to find the file, and I never could. So I bounced it from the other thing that I had, which was like, only like an MP3 or something.
Okay.
So that
one...
It
was truly lo-fi.
So that one was like already lo-fi and then lo-fi again, but then the other one, the blues cover... So it still saddens me that I feel like Love You never got... Nobody got to hear the very good one that I was super in love with,
Yeah.
But then also I'm like, well, maybe just different times and my ears were different. And maybe at the time, I'm like, maybe I thought it sounded better than it did.
Maybe. They don't know what they're missing anyway.
Yeah, that's
we don't
the
know
thing.
What we're missing.
Most people really don't, So I was like, well, it deserves some kind of life form. So put it on that. And then the Champagne and Reefer was... I think I did that like on GarageBand, just like fucking around, like not even serious at all.
Yeah.
But it turned out fun and cool,
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was I love the way that you mix and the way that you use the stereo space, right?
Yeah.
The way that things are placed.
Yeah.
It makes me listen differently and it's real engaging in that way.
Yeah. I'm big into that.
Yeah.
The headphone mix.
Yeah. I can tell. Yeah. I can tell. I mean, and it's fun. It's so much more fun because, you kind of have these preconceived notions about starting points, right? Like things that are going to be in the middle of the field and then things that are going to be, but when they move, it automatically engages me more and turns on my listening ability and gets into my brain more, Like it
me
just
too.
Feels like more of a ride.
Yeah.
And that's some of the places that I want to try to start going. People are so, the fact that that happens is a testament to the fact that we need some fresh ideas about that, And
yeah.
It's happened over time. The Beatles did crazy things based on how limited channels they had, and bouncing things down.
That's where I got the ideas from was listening to stuff like that, Like Hendrix was really doing some wild stuff, and that was like very early on for that kind of thing, those were probably some of the first records that really used the moving, the panning things and moving them while they're going, I'm sure now there's a million records that have that, but at the time, that was pretty
groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool stuff. But when I was a teenager, probably, which is when I really started getting into music, like for real,
Yeah.
That was always very important to me, like stuff like that. Like I wanted that to be on records.
Movement.
I listened for it,
Yeah.
And if it, all of my favorite ones were the ones that had stuff like that,
Yeah.
So, good.
Ah, that's cool. So how did, because when I first started listening to you and hearing you play and stuff, there was definitely some of the flavor and definitely the influence of like where you're from and this sort of country influence aspect, but it was definitely a little bit more rock driven, right?
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment? Is that like an accurate?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking like 99, 2000, 2000, you know, like that's about the time I think that I first started.
Yeah. And probably added the country thing more in as I progressed. Like, I mean, it's not really what I like grew up listening to, like country style stuff.
Yeah. And me either.
Now, my mom listened to Garth Brooks, you know, like she loved, and I loved Garth Brooks with her. Like that was kind of our thing. Like
popular.
I'm talking when I was 10 or 11, you know.
Yeah.
But like, I think, and my dad really liked like Stevie Ray Vaughan and and a few like this guy Chris Smithers, these finger picking guys.
Chris Smithers, I'm not familiar with him.
Really, really great. You know, he taps his feet. He actually mics a board of wood and keeps the beat with his feet. But the recordings that I remember listening to, I've gone back and listened to them, and they're kind of, you know, they're a little cheesy, dated 80s style. But if you get past all that, the guy's amazing. You know, I mean, he's playing just crazy. Like, I mean, he sounds like a full band and he's just one guy.
Right.
So, you know, I did, you know, grow up hearing stuff like that, which I, you know, maybe is where some of the twang came. But, you know, also as I got older, I kind of was like, you know, you sort of think about like how people are going to view an artist from Alabama. And, you know, I think it kind of made me want to give them some country, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because the truth is I've always loved like pedal steel guitars you know, dobro sounds and banjos. I mean, I love those sounds. Like they're just the bending of the thirds, you know, the minor to the major third.
Yeah.
I remember when I was like a later teenager and getting into rock and roll and more like some punk, but more, you know, I got really into, so I became friends with, do you remember the band? They were called Flair. You remember them?
I didn't know them at all, but I remember that name.
So they're a local Birmingham band, and we actually worked together at what's now called Crestline Bagel, you know, in Crestline Village.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Chesapeake Bagel at the time. And these guys, the guitar player and the singer, his name was Rick Wise, and he was a fantastic guitar player. And he was, you know, these guys were all a little older than me. So to me, I was really looking up to them. You know,
I grew up with a guy named Rick Wise. I wonder if it's the same dude.
It would have been, I think he lived off of Valleydale out that way, like down 280 area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick Wise, you know?
Did he start out being sort of, I don't know, when we were kids, he was real into like heavy, like metal-y kind of stuff,
I think,
right?
He probably was, yeah.
And we went to school together at Shades Mountain Christian School for a little while. He was one of my first, like, when I started playing guitar, it was a real solitary thing.
Yeah.
Right? And
he was a great guitar player, right?
And when I'd go to his house, we would pass the guitar back and forth, and he would show me stuff, right? Uh-huh. And it was like, he had an electric guitar. I always had an acoustic, right? And so I was doing more like, well, you're like finger picking stuff and like stuff that I learned from my mom, you know.
Wonder
like
if it's the same guy.
I wonder.
It might be.
It probably, because I feel like Flair. God, man.
It was Rick Wise. Adam Snabel was the bass player.
Okay.
And then they were usually, I think they were pretty much always a three piece. And then their drummers rotated. They had this guy named Chris Goodson. Do you remember him?
I don't.
He played with a bunch of local bands.
Name.
Really great drummer.
Chris.
And then this guy Chris Armour, who he was in the band for a while, and he split, moved to Atlanta. Well, anyway, Rick on the guitar, he was really into verbena, and they actually taught me about verbena, or introduced mm-hmm. me to verbena. And then Scott Bondy was doing this cool twangy move on the guitar. So he was bending basically the minor third of the chord into the major third. So making a major third by bending the note, like right. holding the other notes firm and bending the one.
Yeah.
Similar to like a pedal steel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a very country thing to do. But they were doing it in like this grunge rock, you know, and like,
right.
and it was real cool. And that's what attracted me to it. And in verbena, it was the harmonies of him and Anne Marie, mm-hmm. who was yeah. the singer. Well, Rick Wise kind of learned that same move on guitar from them, and he taught it to me. And then I was like all obsessed with playing that way, you know, learning this twangy kind of cool move.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, you know, verbena asked me to play guitar in their band, and so then I was learning how Bondy was doing it, you know. And
right.
anyway, it was just, you know, these guys were just these killer guitar players, and in a very like original Southern way, but they're not yeah. they weren't flashy, you know. Neither of them were like shredding out solos, you know. They were definitely more just like just these killer guitar players, but you know, and holding these cool chords and using open tunings and doing all this
right
kind of neat stuff. So I got, you know, real into that sound. And then from there, I think as I grew a little older and started getting into like the Rolling Stones and stuff like that, then I was like really ready for all this to take it further into country music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so I went, you know, older country music, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not pop radio. That,
right.
It doesn't have any of that stuff, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. At that point, it was like, you know, I'm proud to be from the South. You know, I want to show this stuff. And the Dexateens, too. You know, that
right.
was another band. As soon as I heard it, I was like, this is freaking amazing. You know, these guys are playing, like, the most punk sound, especially mm-hmm. the Dexateens. The early Dexateens was mm-hmm. straight punk rock,
mm-hmm.
but with twanged out lead guitar,
sort of like just a little bit of rockabilly going on in there,
this guy John Smith on guitar. He's freaking phenomenal, and he was actually shredding out these killer classic rock solos, and I was just like way into this, you know, and these cool kind of southern sounding vocals on top of this just pure fuzzed out garage punk rock, you know. And it was
yeah.
like, man, this is amazing, you know.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's like taking me where I wanted to be at that young age, but like in a whole new way. Like, and it was like, you know, it's cool. They're from the South, but they're representing, you know, they're sounding like they're from the South, but they're also,
but it's still original and it's gritty and it's
yeah, yeah. man, it's great, you mm-hmm. know. But they're also like full punk rock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, loved all that stuff. Very exciting time for me because I actually got to play in all three of those bands.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah,
I was like, you know, I was just like a kid being fed his favorite candy, you know, just constantly
yeah.
like. I think it spoiled me for a little while. I got like,
man.
We got, you know, so lucky.
You're on a path for sure. We'll get back to our conversation with Taylor Hollingsworth right directly, but for the time being, from Country Visions, here is the second track, Leavin' Hearts Alone, right here on Local MASH.
I know you want some, I know you need some.
To really genuinely represent where you're from and then also not become a derivative of some very specific genre-fied reference, you know, or like a one representative from that camp, you know, I guess it can be daunting. Some people just stay away from it so that they don't get...
Yeah.
Right. Because, but
there, yeah, but, I could see that.
But when it just genuinely comes out like that, it's so beautiful. It's
yeah.
So beautiful.
You know, I mean, I was proud of it. I just thought it was cool and it needed to be heard, you know, because it was so neat. I remember when I started playing with Connor Oberst a few years later, we ended up forming this band. You know, it was Connor Oberst and the Mystic Valley Band. And we were doing our first record under that name. And I remember, like, there was this one song, and it turned out to be the first song on the record. I'm playing the lead guitar, and the first thing I thought was, like, man, I got to add that twang, kind of like Dexatine style ripping country lead on this Connor Oberst song. You know what I mean? Because it's, I thought of it like in my mind, I'm like, this is going to reach such a large audience. You know, I'm like, I got to incorporate this in there, you know? So I was always real proud of, it wasn't really like my favorite guitar part that I played with him or anything like that. But I remember thinking how cool it was to like slip this like Dexatine's styled lead guitar in a Connor Oberst song that was going to reach that audience, you know, a whole different audience, you know.
Right.
And was always secretly real proud of that.
Very cool juxtaposition. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
yeah.
where the best stuff always ends up coming from. I feel like, you know, you get a few different ears on something.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and
that's I'm
just
all
comes alive.
Yeah. All of my favorite art, music, you know, anything creative and artistic, you know, that's my favorite stuff mm-hmm. is like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's important, you know. Yeah. It's like collaging everything, you know.
Yeah.
You know, collaging sound or collaging, you know.
It's the best way to find something really original, I think, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I remember when I was, you know, around that same age, listening to Beck, you know, that early Beck stuff. Like,
God, I've been going down a rabbit hole again. There's some of his just that really get me.
Mellow Gold was the album to me that I fell in love with. And that's juxtaposition all over the record. You know, it's like the guy, I truly believe I don't believe like there's people that are necessarily geniuses. I think there's people reach genius moments. And if they get that moment recognized or they get that moment recorded or put down and the stars align and it reaches where it needs to go, you know, and I think he hit the genius mark on that. You know, I think he hit it several times back in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, the way he would put a banjo and over a hip hop beat,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, I mean, there's been people now that have done that, but I mean, I don't think at the time I had really heard many people do blues dobros over hip hop beats
right.
with these crazy lyrics coming from freaking everywhere.
And he's drawn from the Latin flavor from Southern California and Mexico and like all the time.
Every style of music is thrown in there. I mean, you'll have a song that's like goes from Prince to freaking T-Model Ford to the Beastie Boys mm-hmm. to... You know what
and
I mean?
Some Nick Drake thrown in there, like if you think about Sea Change,
sure.
you know. And
yeah.
like, I mean, just it's vast.
Yeah, but especially when he hits it in one song, you're just like, wow. You mm-hmm. know, it's cool, man.
Yeah,
it's big that kind of stylistic approach or whatever. You know, it's mm-hmm. big influence to me personally. You know?
Yeah, me too.
I consider it very important. You know.
Yeah.
You have to be yourself and you have to do what comes out of you. But for me, I've always enjoyed touching on many styles, multiple styles, and you know what I mean? So,
yeah, you know, and we've come from a time where we've heard a lot more music, a lot more different styles of music and genres of music and things like that, right? So when you go to draw, you have a bigger knowledge base, right? Than say somebody in the 30s, mm-hmm. right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, whatever decade previous to technology that we have now,
right?
Right.
Oh, imagine the kids now. I mean, they have everything at their fingertip. I mean, like, you know, I've met this younger generation of musicians. A lot of these guys out in California that I've known through people, but. You know, these kids know so much about music, it blows my mind. And I'm like, well, of course they do, because they grew up with an iPhone. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
they can freaking listen to anything. I mean, they're better at using the technology than I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. I mean, it's a little scary, too, you know, like...
No, it's a real trip, man.
It's, on many, many levels, but it's also interesting and cool, you know? I mean,
yeah.
It's the way we're going, natural progression.
Positive applications of these really powerful tools.
Oh, yeah.
That do have a kind of an up and a downside to the way that they affect society and the way that we remember things and the way that we create and what we can draw from. I mean, it's just a big tug of war standing right in the middle. hopefully we'll stay in the middle. I don't know, man. These are interesting times. Ooh. All around,
not to say the least.
not like the world hasn't been in places like this before.
Sure.
I mean, I think it's easy to forget that.
You're right. Yeah, we have.
Because we didn't live through it.
And we look back at them as very dark times. And it's scary to think that we might be knocking on the door of another. Or maybe we're in the middle of it, you know.
I think that's probably more likely, that the subtle, slow shift of everything has sort of surreptitiously crept in, and yeah, we're living in a situation that's like that without it being like, this thing happened and now everything's changed. It's like, no, so many things have happened.
Yeah.
So many little moves over a course, right? In yeah, so many different fields and whatever. And so now we find ourselves trying to understand where we are rather yeah, than being like, oh, we're here now, we weren't expecting that. It's like, wait a minute, where are we? What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, let's just hope, though, that, I one of the scary things to me are the many people that I feel like aren't trying to understand it and are just trying to close their eyes and push it away because they don't want anything to change in their perfect world. You know what I mean? It's like, I think that's a big part of the problem is, you got half of the country trying to show you the picture, hello, here is all of this stuff happening, and this is stuff that's been going on for so long, we need to face it, and like, we need to like understand it and like learn about it and listen to people. And, there's like a demographic that is really fighting it. They don't want that, people don't want change. It's weird. I don't think they would admit it to themselves.
Well, riddle me this, right? So how do we, as we age, because you see this happen in generations, right? You see this happen at a certain age to all kinds of people. It's easier to dig your heels in, to be like, I'm comfortable with this. We figured this out. Mm-hmm. Now, don't go throwing a, don't, you know, if it ain't broke, don't, don't right, fix it kind of thing, when in reality, we're not really in a situation where it ain't broke.
Yeah.
It's like there's certain, like you said, certain demographic that,
well, they feel like their personal circle ain't broke.
Right, right.
But they're, you have to look beyond your yard
yeah,
and your neighborhood and realize what if you were in this circle over here, you might be saying, oh, it is broke.
Mm-hmm.
We do want change, there's a part of human nature that comes into play that people want the easiest answer or the less suffering and pain on themselves to go through, the easiest way out is what people want, I don't know.
Is it the easiest thing for me, or is it the easiest and best thing for our entire society of people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the, so here's one real tiny example, right? This whole pandemic thing with the virus has affected people like you and I in ways that it hasn't affected some people. Right. Now, everyone has been affected by it, right? There's some people that their income has been affected more, and there's some people that haven't. Mm-hmm. If we take just that one thing right there, it's interesting and really encouraging, I guess, hopeful, that while it is really heavily affecting you and I and a lot of the creative and musicians that I know and have talked to recently, we're still a little bit more on this conservative side of being like, nah, let's wear our masks and let's shut everything down for a little bit longer. I know it's hitting me hard, but the thing is that it's better for everyone, right? And
yes.
You have people who are being less affected monetarily, to be
right.
honest.
Yeah.
Who can't, won't be told
what to do.
What,
well, they feel
quote,
like they're
what
being
to do, right?
told what to do.
Because it's not comfortable.
Right.
It's uncomfortable. I mean, we've had all of these awkward moments, like when you came over here today, and I was like, we didn't talk about this beforehand. How are we going to make sure we both feel comfortable being in? Now, we're keeping our distance, right? We're not all up in front of each other.
Right.
But mm-hmm. we are definitely inside a building.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
yep.
so we had that quick.
Yeah.
This is what I've been doing. You gave me the, this is what we've been doing. This is what I'm comfortable with. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody drew any guns. You know?
Yeah.
I mean.
So. It's just, I have a hard time talking about it without just, you know. being mean towards a lot of
sure,
people.
Sure. And we don't have to go there. I mean, my point was sort of like, how do we create this environment where the majority of people, even though something may not be in their best interest, right, or may not seem like it's in their best interest right now, the fact that that something is in the best interest
yeah.
of an entire society is always in everyone's best interest.
I know, man.
Right?
Gets you up to see. God's almighty vision is too vast for you and me. And everyone will end up with the man upstairs, except for cops and killers. Well, they end up down there. They go to hell.
Cops and Killers, right here on Local MASH. And now we're back to our conversation with Taylor Hollingsworth.
I have no answer other than I believe that our system is not working correctly now. You know, yeah. I've always had a problem that it's a two-party system.
Me too.
It's
me
like,
too.
You know, why does it have to be Alabama versus Auburn?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's
so binary,
and then you have to think like, well, was it designed this way all along for this reason? You know, but you know, I mean, personally, when I vote on a leader, I know that all humans are flawed, and I know that every human has political reach and political influence, and people influencing them, and they have to, you know, please so many people to get elected, you know, but it ends up becoming this, that's the whole problem with the system is like, you know, they want to get elected more than they want to actually lead
do any one
and
thing,
do
yeah.
the real job and make the country better, you know, and people will do anything to get elected. They'll mm-hmm. do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's sad, you know, so, I mean, I have to look at the character of the human being and, you know, truly, mm-hmm. you know, you have to really, you know, really think like, you can't believe anything that they say, basically. I mean, you want to believe it, but you have to always consider on, and I'm talking on both sides.
You have to always
consider that this could be a face spitting information that you want to hear so they can get put onto this pedestal.
Yeah.
And advance their own personal career and influence and power and whatever. But, you know, you can, you know, I get so tired of, you know, people saying, well, this guy is a horrible human being, but, you know, I got to vote for him because of his economic policies. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
no, you don't have to vote for him because of that. Do you really, I mean, how much has really changed for you, truly, really changed for you over your entire span of your life that stuff really make, I mean, sure, you might pay more in taxes one year, or you might whatever, but you're still standing here. You know, you're an American. We have it pretty freaking good, you mm-hmm. know, compared to a large majority of the world. And
all of our other social, you know, issues notwithstanding,
exactly,
we still really do.
Exactly. You have to remember that.
And I say we,
what
as
is happening
all
now,
Americans, I'm not trying to say white people, or, I mean, with that, like, I'm saying we all have to remember, as much as I feel like I need those things to change,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I need.
Well,
I'm not
saying we, you know, don't need change. There are, we do.
That's what
need
I'm saying.
Change.
But it's still very, if we just start talking about how bad everything is, it's only going to get worse.
Man.
Right? I mean, we've got to have a balanced viewpoint about what needs to change and what is wonderful, and that allows us to talk about what needs to change,
you
right?
Know,
the fact that we can even have discourse and sort of butt heads over this stuff is of huge freedom.
Yeah.
Right? That right. in itself, not that there's the
and
solution's
let's not
been found.
Lose that freedom.
Let's not lose that.
I mean, it, at this point, I mean, I feel like we're knocking on the door of losing that possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I, in the depth of my soul and heart, hope that people will really, if that came to be a possibility, that people would vote the other way, or for the, you know what I mean? But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, it's just like, we're at a time, clearly, where you might need to drop your economic policy stance and vote for some major social issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then hold them to it. You know, once they get there for saying they're going to do what they're going to do, I mean, do everything we can to make them do it. And there's a whole large movement happening right now. And a big part of it is, I think that the generations before us are having a very hard time seeing these younger generations come in and calling them out, you know,
mm-hmm.
and saying,
mm-hmm.
why is this way and why is this way? Because the younger generations, you know, the farther we are removed from our horrible history, you know, of
mm-hmm.
slavery. I mean, enslaving a human being is, I mean, it's freaking insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, to treat somebody like they're not a human being, that's...
And humans the world
that,
over have done
you know,
it.
For... And to do it in the name of religion, you
mm-hmm.
know, of your mm-hmm. God or whatever, like, I mean, if you are truly a spiritual, you know, being who believes in a higher power and believes that, you know, we were created this way, I mean, how could you live like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could you harm someone? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
or
not view someone is an equal.
It's blasphemous.
You know what I mean? I mean,
it's just like the core of the epitome
so,
of blasphemy.
It's so mind-blowing. I mean, I just, you know, I never had that. I mean, no, you know, never in my family was I ever taught anything. You know, I just, to me, it's just like crazy that anybody would grow up and be taught that, you know, black people are worse than white people. That's
mm-hmm.
that's just like what I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and then at the same time they're going around blasting rap music or blasting, you know,
oh, yeah.
blues and
oh, yeah.
and I mean jazz. I mean
yeah.
our entire American culture, you know, like the greatest, probably the greatest art in, you know, music and in part of our culture is from African American communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's like, I mean, you know, just that alone is like, you know,
it's mind blowing.
It's like,
the blindness.
It's like, yeah, they're just, it's like blind or ignorant or just, I don't understand it. You know, I just don't understand it.
I don't either.
It hurts.
I think we're both fortunate that wasn't ingrained in us at an early age, you know.
And people have to wake up and change it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, abolishing slavery was obviously the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But you can't, after you abolish slavery, just still treat, you know, another human being as less. You know, I mean, to think that they didn't get a right to vote until, you know, way later, and the same goes for women not getting a right to vote.
I know.
You know, it's just, it's truly crazy, you know, and I think it's just, my only understanding is that I guess it's just like gone so far back into these bloodlines or something, and they just keep trying to like hold it that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I mean, I just can't, you know, imagine a mindset of not wanting peace, just peace.
Yeah.
Like, how would that make anyone's suburb or whatever worse?
Less,
you know,
desirable,
what I mean?
To live
yeah,
in,
like
yeah.
What are you talking about? Like,
it doesn't make logical sense.
It makes
man.
No it, logical.
It's
sense.
Not about that. We're
it's not, and
we
they
really
use
think
it.
We are. But
they use that language, but you know, and the, I mean, weren't we taught about propaganda? Like at a young age in school when we studied, you know,
World War II.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you not see it when it's in front of your eyes? I mean, how
well,
are you missing?
That was then, Taylor. That was then.
I know. How, I mean, how do you not see somebody just, I mean, in my mind, it's going to be pretty obvious. The dude calling everybody else wrong and saying, everything's fake news is probably going to be the dude who's actually spreading the fake news.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
That's just common sense.
Right.
I mean, how you don't see beyond that is another mind-blowing issue I'm still dealing with, you know, trying to understand.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I don't. I know we didn't intend to go here, but I feel like it's a sign of the times. I mean,
it is.
You know, the conversation naturally steers, you know, this way. But
yep, all the things we're not supposed to talk about, politics, religion. Taylor and I seem to dig deep when we get together, and I enjoy it, and I hope you guys are too. Here's Man Downtown from Country Visions, and this is Local MASH.
Time I asked how you do it, something like this.
Well, it can, and I think that it's all right for it to, as long as it's civil.
Yeah.
And because it's not going to change if we, just pretending like it's not a thing, obviously, that doesn't work, right?
Yeah,
I mean, like, just, and even though it's not a thing for me in my everyday dealings.
Sure.
As it may be for some people. Now, I'm not saying that I don't have prejudices. I think every individual...
Look, I think it's human nature to be maybe somewhat scared or for lack of a better word, you know, but like, you know, want to keep their distance from anybody who's different. I mean, if you're not, you know, you have to surround yourself by that... to overcome that uncomfortableness or whatever anybody has.
Sure.
But every moment of my personal life when I've felt that way, the only way to get past that is to immerse yourself in it. And then you realize, what was I thinking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why was I scared of that? Or why was I, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So... I don't, you know,
I
it's,
do.
It's
I do.
Like because we've all divided our, you know, drawn these invisible lines of where we live and these people stay here and these people stay here. I feel like as the younger generations keep coming up, there's a little bit less and less of that. And now we're in some kind of weird middle ground where you got the, you know, the ones that didn't have that, so scared of their neighbor over here that's different, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because they mm-hmm. haven't actually tried to just get to know each other, you know? I mean...
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's just...
And not to, like, argue with you at all, but definitely to play devil's advocate, too, I don't think there's anything wrong. I can't seem to think of anything wrong with, like, well, I mean, people that have things in common are going to gather together.
Sure.
Like, that's not necessarily like some sort of
that's human
decision
nature.
That someone makes that they're not going to be part of another group. It's
right.
just like, oh, these are my people. And these are so when I think about my best friend, I'm going to call this person because that's whatever they look like. You've got things in common, right?
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with
no.
People with like-mindedness or just whatever the common denominator is, being together. It's not that we have to break all of that down and you can't stand next to somebody like you because
sure.
that's wrong. I mean, that just seems like, I know I'm totally blowing this out of proportion, right? It's sort of like hyperbole to state a point, right?
Yeah.
That if you take it to its logical conclusion, well, it's just not even practical.
What
right?
is the thing? If you're, you know, everybody's busy going about their daily lives. I'm not saying that, like, you know, if you're not confronted with this or this hasn't, you know, stood up right in front of your face. I'm not saying you're a bad person or something, like, but I do believe that when you come to the wall with the two doors, mm-hmm. and here we are at a dead end, and we've got to choose which way to go, well, then it's time to choose the right door.
And it may be something different.
You know?
It may be something different than you thought it was going to be.
And it may be, yeah,
and
sure.
And I would even argue, to sort of argue against the point that I made just a second ago, if you're not fully engaged in sort of challenging yourself in these ways, at least if it's not built in some way,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is for you, I can't say, right? But if we're not trying to grow and trying to, again, like you said, immerse yourself in something that you may not feel completely comfortable. Now, I'm not saying become a mass murderer because you don't understand how those people's minds work. That's not what I'm saying, you know? I'm not saying become a thief, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it's got to be something that is a positive
peaceful
thing, right? Then there may be something missing in your life and in my life.
Yeah, open your hearts, you know?
Which is
open
creating an environment for all of us that is not the best that it could be.
I just think, and I also think maybe it's a human condition or natural for humans to be stubborn, you know.
Some of us more than others.
Certainly an American, you know, certainly
American.
An American thing. But, you know.
That's not a white or black thing. That's an
fighting,
everybody thing.
Yeah, like stop just like saying no and anti this because you saw something on Facebook that said, you know, these people are crooked. Like, okay, if that's true, you know, well, then do the research yourself, you mm-hmm. know, and also question, yeah. well, maybe the people that shared that information are crooked, and maybe they have a motive to share that information. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying this shouldn't be viewed on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I watch the news, you know, I will turn on 6 or 7 channels and see what people are talking about. And
yeah.
I'll put Fox News on and
yeah.
I will look and see what they're reporting. You know, I was really interested in all the Portland stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I would turn on MSNBC, CNN, and then my personal favorite is public television.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the PBS NewsHour. I watch that, but then I'll also turn on Fox News because I wanted to see their angle and why their stance is this way.
Absolutely.
Because for me, that's how I'm going to make the best judgment for myself, you know, on what I believe.
You're informing yourself.
Yeah. You know, if you got a line of
full spectrum of options
of 10 people and 8 or 9 of them are telling you, this is what's true, this is what's true, you know, and 1 to 2 of them are saying, they're all liars, you know, they're all liars, listen to me, mm-hmm. I am what's right. The chances are,
mm-hmm.
you know, the 1 to 2...
It's a numbers game at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, do the math. Now, it's a very...
It's not always true, but,
it's not
but
always
by and large,
true.
By and large, it's a good place to start.
But it's a very paranoid way of living and thinking, you know, to really go down the rabbit hole of a lot of these conspiracy theories that are out there that are, you know, there's no real proof on a lot of the stuff that's being said, you know. I mean, you know, I've had a problem with what's been going on from day one. I mean, mm-hmm. I was shocked to begin with, but, you know, it's...
I'm pretty horrified when I just look at society in general, so I'm kind of already in that place before this sort of head that we've arrived at. And it's, I mean, if we're talking about the two biggest things that are going on right now, mm-hmm. then it would be social issues, right? And
yeah.
it would be the illness.
Sure.
Well, man, I've been a freaking loon about washing my hands, and you can ask my wife. We're doing things now that we've been married 10 years that from the first moment that we lived together,
yeah.
I said, can we do this way? Like, mm-hmm. can we keep
these surfaces more clean? Can we take our shoes off when we come inside? And it's been a real struggle, right? We have different personalities. We approach things differently. And now we are on the same page about that stuff. That is something that's always been important to me, you know? And I think it's a great, this I'm taking a sort of a benign example to try to illustrate my point again, that I've always been heartbroken over the history that we've had in the United States, not just in the South.
Yeah.
Because I will say this, I will say that we have hit some things head on in the South and dealt with issues. We are farther down the road with some of these social issues.
Yeah.
Now, there's still an extremist movement on both sides of this that I'm not referring to. I'm talking about you and me and the normal average Southern individual, right? Where we're a little bit farther down the road with some of this stuff than, say, some of these northern cities where we're seeing a lot of this violence more, right? I mean, I don't observe those behaviors in Birmingham like has happened in some of these other places, right? I feel like...
In some ways,
And because for a long time it was like, you guys got it wrong and you got to get it right, right? That we had to look at it a little bit more intently.
Yeah, we did.
And again, we are all Americans. I'm not trying to do a North-South thing, but regionally,
what is
Americans?
Like, you know, what is an American? I mean, we, you know, from the very beginning,
it's a melting pot.
Exactly. That's the whole point
that
of our country.
Who we
that
are.
Was literally why we founded the country, was to let in the immigrants. We were the immigrants. All of our ancestors were immigrants. Unless you are a Native American, you're an immigrant.
Well,
you
know? Really, we were invaders.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nobody lives here. Excuse me. And you know, if you go to the whole
sad.
Eddie Izzard bit where, you know.
You know, it's totally sad, you know, and in the whole Confederate monument thing, it's like, you know, it's sad our history and like some of the things our ancestors did. Just because they're related to you doesn't mean you have to support everything that they did. I mean, my God, like, you know, I mean, if you look at the people you're related to, just that are still alive now, there's not many people that don't have one or two relatives that they're like, oh, wow, that he really did some bad things, you know? You know, you can say that. That's okay, you know? My brother actually has been doing a lot of research into our, you know, history, our ancestors.
Genealogical.
Yeah, so. He's been trying to dig up on both sides, you know. Both of our parents have passed away, so, you know, he's doing a lot of the research through reaching out to aunts and uncles or distant, you know, cousins, distant aunts and uncles. And we found some really cool stuff through our history and some really sad stuff, you know. Some of the people that were in the South, I mean, there were, you know, we have a few relatives that we found out were fought for the Confederacy, you know, and actually were pretty high up in the ranks. And it's like, I'm still over here shouting, tear that shit down, man. Sorry to the bad language. But, you know, that doesn't mean anything to me. That's not my history. I mean, that's not who I am.
Exactly.
You know, if there is something that's posted around and it is offending a lot of people, then take it down. What's the problem? Take it down. Why do you care so much? You know, I mean, it's mine. That's just another thing that...
A little known. We're all to be I hope that mole don't get too mad. I wrecked his mansion really bad. I bet he'd understand if in East of where I stand. And we'd be sharing the same desires. It's not on the, it's not on the side. It ain't bitching you like a little moon. We're on to be, ain't underneath. I could fly it. I made them out of wood and galvanized. As soon as I got my speed, I ran into a tree. And wouldn't you know it, that damn tree that I hit is the one that sits outside your living room. It's not on the, it's not on your side.
Over you. Now, back to Taylor.
Just do good. You know, just be a good person. It's just like, in the end of the day, every person doesn't have to go out and be a superhero. And, like, mm-hmm. you can go about your daily life and, like, you know, I mean, like, my main focus is my child and my family, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but, like, and sure, I don't have time, you know, much time on my hands to be an activist or whatever, or go out and do, you know, stuff that I wish I could probably be a part of. But
you do in the, like, wherever you're working in that particular day, do the things, be that person,
be
the person that you want to be.
Be a good person. When you face the challenge, do the right thing.
Way more powerful than standing up with a sign in a group of people that all think like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Way more powerful to just be doing and going about your day and being the man, that the woman, the child that you know you should be.
Yeah.
That's going to make everything
better. I mean, the golden rule. Weren't we all taught that at like a very young age? I know I was. I still remember my dad teaching me the golden rule, you know, and like having me say it over and over again. And and like, that's always stuck
and making
with me.
The distinction.
And I remember telling my daughter the golden rule and thinking about it, you know, especially with her. I remember, now let's talk about it, and now let's think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's think about what that means. Let's come up with some examples where the golden rule would apply.
It's not as they do to you, it's as you would have them do to
you. As you would have them, exactly. That's where we, that's the trick. And you know, and I mean, it just really could be so simple, you know. You don't have to hate anybody for their differences. You don't have to, you know, hate them for their beliefs. You know, it all, I mean, it's mm-hmm. all, it all comes down to differences, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's no reason, there's just no reason to hate, you know? I mean, if you, I mean, unless it's somebody that has done horrible things to you, then, I mean, if you can try to be the biggest person in the world and still give them love, you know, but I understand that's hard to do, but, you know, just, you know, try.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So out of all of this seemingly malaise comes Country Visions.
We haven't even talked about music. Yeah, I get, you know, these songs are, you know, like, for the most part, I try to respect everybody's differences and their beliefs, and though they might differ from mine, as an artist, I don't consider myself, like, really a political artist, you know, I try to stay out of it, but, you know, there's a little bit in these songs on this album, just on a few. For the most part, I wanted the album to just be fun, you know, just something fun to listen to.
Well, I like the juxtaposition because I have like written down a few things just because I knew I'd want to remember them. So I'll grab my notes in a second. But yeah, I mean, you can. Yeah. Yeah. There's some fun in there. And then there's some. I wouldn't say that you were political. There's issues that are mentioned.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. But it's definitely not political.
Yeah, exactly.
At all. I mean, it's not a protest record by any means. In none of the songs.
To be honest, I hate politics. And you know, I hate all that.
Me too.
You know, it's
me too.
Sad that this is where our minds have to be right now. Well, but.
And we will get off this because I do want to talk about the record because that's why we're here. And I'm excited about it. I've had fun listening to it.
Thanks, man.
But if the people who don't want to talk about it don't start talking about it, we're not going to get any of the really good solutions. Because like you said, the people that want to be in charge making these decisions, they're typically not the people best suited for it.
Yeah. No.
You don't get a statesman.
We're all humans, man.
From an ego-driven, you know, you get a statesman from that reluctant guy who got stuck in the situation where everybody goes, you have to be the guy. There's not anybody else to do it.
And he's going,
please, God, no, please let this pass for me.
Yeah.
Let this cup be for someone else because I don't want it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I thank you. Thank you for being willing to, you know, just like kind of go down that path. I feel like I heard Jimi Hendrix on the Dick Cavett show one time talking about how things were going in the 60s, and this feels very much like the late 60s.
It does, yeah.
It feels very much like the late 20s and 30s when depression was ending and we were finally trying to find a way out. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's not going to get better if everybody just complains and talks about how bad it is. We've got to be creative and genuinely find solutions for these issues.
Yeah.
So it feels like one of those times to me.
Yeah,
and in hindsight, I think history will look at this time very differently than we do now because we're all so concerned with just trying to figure out how to make it through the day right now.
It's a strange time, you know, because on top of all that, all these social issues, and possibly part of the reason they're all coming up into the light is technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're also at a time of crazy technological advances and that's going to continue,
it is.
You know, and
it's going to take creative. Hendrix was just like, I feel like before long, I'm paraphrasing, but that society will not be looking to politicians to solve these problems. They're going to be looking to
creatives, thinkers. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the solutions, that's where your mind works differently, you know, and you see options, you see many, many solutions, and you can more quickly get at, because making a record is like that. When you start, it could be anything.
Yeah.
It can be anything.
Yeah, that's what I love.
You can go crazy with one guitar tone or one snare drum sound, and you could lose
Yeah.
Everything, yeah. Right? You could end up sitting there and spending all the time that you were going to do. You've got to look at what's there and say, all right, this thing is already putting itself together.
Dude, every song is, to me, you know, like that. I mean, you're creating something that will now have its own life out of nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love that about songwriting, you know? That's my favorite part, and that's what makes me the most excited is the moment that you realize you've got something and you're getting it down, and it's like, you know, it once you let go of that song, it's recorded and out there, it's got its own life to live now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah. So were these sort of written in a group as like with an album in mind, or how did the list of songs that are included on Country Visions, how did it come together this time?
No, I still have yet to record like a full concept type album where they're all written with one sort of commonality.
It's crazy because you have such cohesion in the way that you write anyway. It never feels.
Yeah.
Now I love sort of schizophrenic albums, but it never feels just like, yeah, what? Where none of these things fit together. It always feels very cohesive to me.
Well, I think the cohesiveness comes with me doing them all around the same time period.
Sure.
So I'm into a lot of the same sounds
your approach to the instruments and stuff like that. Yeah.
And that changes through time, but if you record all that at the same time, you're going to be, you know, putting all that in at once.
More of a distillation or a snapshot of that time period.
Of that time. Yeah. So I think that's where that comes from. But
are you pulling from stuff previous to like Tap Dance and Daddy, or has all of this have been since then?
I'm always pulling from all times. I mean, yeah, I think some of these riffs or ideas have been, some of them I came up with right then, and then some of them probably have been sitting around, floating around for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I remember like I had been messing around with the Man Downtown song.
I love that, man. I'm going to talk about that in a second.
Thanks. That's my favorite one probably from the record.
It's so visually, like, there's a real word picture being painted with that one. Just the way that he describes what he's wearing, you know, and like,
yeah,
who the guy's telling you about who he is and why he's such a bad A, right?
Yeah, exactly. But kind of goofy at the same time, you know.
And maybe even homeless.
Yeah,
I mean, like,
exactly.
You almost get this, like, this guy's way big for his britches.
Yeah.
And there's some missing link. Like, there's some disconnection here,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. I got a couple of the lines, you know, over the last couple years. Many times in the past, I've had side jobs and side gigs to make extra money.
Yeah.
And I was really, you know, I decided to be an Uber Lyft driver for a while. I haven't done it in a while, but I was real into it. You know, I actually loved doing that job.
Yeah.
And some of the ideas from that song came from this one guy that I drove. And he was just a super wild man. I think he was homeless. And this wealthier couple actually paid for his ride, and they were trying to help this guy out, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gave him a story. Hey, I really need a ride. You know, I think he was just asking for money.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to give him money necessarily, but they were like, well, we'll just get you an Uber.
To get you where you
gotta go. To where you need to go. Man, this character, he got in my car, and they told me the situation up front. So at first, I was a little irritated with them. You know, I was like, so you don't know this man at all. He could be totally dangerous, and you're just going to put him in my car with me, you know, and I now have to give this guy a ride. So, you know, at first I was like a little cautious with the fella, you know.
Of course.
But I'm usually pretty good at talking to all different kinds of people. I've, you know, had a lot of different interactions in my life. And befriended a lot of people from a lot of different places. some homeless and stuff. So, you know, I kind of had a good jive with this dude. And, man, this guy took those people for a ride. He told me to go here and here and here. He was bouncing around all over town. I mean, the guy ended up, and you know what? I was like, I'm going to take you wherever you want because they told me to, they put you in my car. They didn't consider me, so I'm not going to consider them. You know, this is what they get.
This is what they get.
And they finally called me with him in the car as we're still riding. And, they were like, we just wanted to check that everything was okay. We can see you on the map, and you haven't got anywhere yet. Yeah, you passed where you were supposed to go. And I was like, yes, ma'am. You know, he asked me if I would take him to the store first, and then this one other place. And then he started, my phone was on speaker, so he starts talking to him. You know,
yeah,
all really hilarious. But anyway, this guy was, you know, he had hooked up with some little bit of cash in his pocket, and he was showing me all the money that he made and how he had all these little those little small bottles of liquor, the little airplane bottles.
Uh-huh.
He had like a bag of them, you know. He's like, let me give you some of these, you know, I'm gonna tip you for all these rides, you know. He was real nice to me. And so we're cruising around, and this guy tells me he's gonna go into this, it was a Mexican restaurant that had a little bar, and he goes, I'm going to go get me some ladies. Oh, first he wanted to go by this clothing shop. So he bought him some new clothes. And then he gets back in my car, hands me his old clothes. He goes, you can have these. I'm standing there with all these old, okay, man, yeah. Thanks. You know, I think I threw them away. I was like, I don't know if I should keep these on me. But this guy, he looks at me. He goes, you want to see how I get the ladies? You know, and I was like, yeah, man, let me see how you do it. And, man, he gave me this eye. He goes, I look at him with my good eye, you know. And he gave me this grin and this one eye. So I threw that into the line of the chorus there, you know. I was thinking about him. I got a gaze in my good eye.
Gaze in my good eye. That's one of the lines I was going to ask you about. He just gave me this smile
that, I mean, it would have made anybody laugh.
You can hear the second half of this conversation and the rest of the record, Country Visions from Taylor Hollingsworth, in the next episode. This is Local Mash, and here is Paradise Island.
Because I'm so damn tired of all this working. recycling, then clean the kitchen. Even asleep, it's sleep I'm missing. Now you know why when I see you high-end, watching TV from Paradise Island, giving everything. I wanna blow your brains up, baby.
This is Local Mash.